All right, so I started recording, and today is April 22nd, and it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and this is the meeting of the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. And so I'd like to call this meeting to order and recognize the council members who are present. We have present today council member Ken Leon Guerrero, Kathy Castro, Dr. Awadi, Yvette Paulino, and myself, Rachel Leon Guerrero. We also have visiting with us today is Dr. Christ, who's the president of the United States, president of UOG, and we have our UOG general counsel, Anthony Camacho. We also have a representative from, I think, Senator Amanda Shelton's office, and from Senator Therese Terlahi's office. Oh, and we now have council member Peter Scrow. So I asked before we begin, we need everybody, since this is a government council, everyone is supposed to have their cameras on. So just want to remind everyone to do that. Okay. So in keeping with the Robert's Rules of Orders, we really should be approving minutes before we do any open discussion. Is that okay, Ken?
I think this is critical that we get this on the table first in view of the fact that the council is going to be
I would just state that I believe Ms. Leon Guerrero is correct. We should go down the order and bring it up in the order that the agenda states. Thank you. That's just my advice.
And thank you, Mr. Camacho. And just in keeping with this type of meeting, during the council meeting, it's supposed to be on. It's the members of the council that are make comments and speak, and then unless there is somebody's invited or asked a question, and then at the end of the meeting during open discussion, we will open it up to non-council members to ask questions. Okay. So let's go ahead and approval of the minutes from March 11th and March 25th. Remelin sent out the minutes, I think last week. And so has everybody had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes. Are you entertaining each minute, the two different minutes?
Yeah, let's do it separately. Let's look at March 11th first. So everybody has had a chance to review those minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes or questions? Okay, if there's no corrections, do we have a motion to accept the minutes for March 11th?
I move to accept the March 11th minutes.
Okay, thanks, Ken. Any second? Any second?
I second.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. If there's any all in favor, give a thumbs up. Okay, great, okay. Any opposed? Okay, all right. So next we'll move on to the March 25th. Minutes. Did everybody
I have a correction on that.
Okay.
On the attendance, you've listed Charissa Menabusin as a Guam Memorial Hospital member. She's actually the committee director for Senator Therese Terlahi.
Okay. Okay, Remelin, can you make that correction? Okay, great. Any other corrections? All Okay, if there's no other corrections, can I have a motion to approve the minutes from March 25th?
I move to approve the 25th.
Okay, thanks, Ken. Any second? Anybody?
I did. Yeah, you're right. I don't like it.
Can I approve? Can I move? Anybody? Anybody? If anybody has spoken, you're muted.
I can't hear.
I can't hear you, Peter.
Hear me now?
Oh, now I can. Okay. Thank you.
What I was trying to say is, as far as these minutes, we can go ahead and get the motions done, but I'd like to have some discussion before we vote.
Okay. What do you have a question about the minutes?
Yes, I do. I specifically recall on the issue of getting legal counsel's advice that it was you as chair that said you weren't going to send this to legal counsel. And I agreed. And that we weren't going to send the opinion Kathy wanted to legal counsel because, for one, you stated on the record that we had waited so, that GMH has waited so long. And I feel that procedurally, the request for a legal counsel was never approved by us. I understand what you had written to me with the answer.
I can't hear you, Peter.
I'm sorry?
You couldn't hear what you said the last few sentences.
I said that I read what you wrote as far as your reliance on legal counsel, and I can understand that in the various roles that you have at the university. But as a council, we never approved for those questions by Kathy to go to legal counsel. In fact, we didn't approve it.
Well, I don't remember that quite that way. My recollection is that we agreed that we didn't need to send everything to legal counsel, but then that was kind of in a different context. And then Kathy had some specific questions because she said, and she sent us an email and she said that she had, she had specific questions. She thought it over and she wanted to engage, ask the legal counsel these questions. And so that's why I sent it on. And she, you know, she was very open about CCing everybody on that.
I'm not questioning that, Rachel. It was very open. I'm not suggesting that. But in any corporate board of directors, any commission, any type of counsel like ours, you don't get a legal opinion is, to me as a lawyer, a major act. And we didn't approve to get a legal opinion. And I'm kind of bothered at the way that the legal opinion, I don't think it was fair to legal counsel to get the type of questions that he got. That's another thing. I feel that the questions given to legal counsel were somewhat misleading. And we had a lengthy discussion on the reasons for why GMH is actually doesn't realize a profit. Whereas the questions, the way the question is framed is it's like a $100 million corporation, which it's not. And I believe that that discussion truly led to a lot of what we eventually voted on, that we were going to help GMH. I mean, I'm very concerned about this reliance on this legal opinion. For one, we never approved it. And I feel that we're not bound by it because it was never approved. And I don't think that any council member has the unilateral authority to send anything to legal counsel. Nobody has that authority. I would never do that.
Okay.
If it's something that's going to bind the whole council, then the whole council must act.
Okay, Peter.
I'm
sorry, I'm going to interrupt because my boss, the president of UOG, who's also basically has authority over this council, he would like to speak. So I'd like to give him the opportunity to ask his question or respond.
So let me just say that the funding for this and the way this is structured is that I'm the sign-off authority for any of these recommendations. So the board recommends to me, and then I decide whether it fits within the rules and whether I can do so. I routinely ask my legal counsel, my general counsel, for opinions on all sorts of matters. And so it's perfectly within my right to ask for my general counsel to advise, and that's what happened. So let's move along with the minutes and correct them in whatever way we think it should, and then resume the agenda.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kreis. And Peter, I was actually going to some of this discussion regarding GMH's application.
You know what, Rachel, I got to say something. You know, I'm sorry, everybody, but this is not what I signed up for. I've been on many boards and commissions, and the bureaucracy that's going on here, unilateral authorities of people just submitting whatever they want. And, you know, I'm really concerned that we have cancer patients that are not going to get medication because we're going to follow a legal opinion and we're going to follow what everybody thinks is right. But I think we're forgetting what we're really supposed to be doing. So because of that, you guys, I'm going to turn in my resignation and I resign effective immediately. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Let's move on.
I apologize. I was actually going through the minutes. I do have comments on the minutes. And I see the minutes are a little bit more detailed than what I'm used to seeing. I think under B, new business letter B, I, local oncology request, I do recall asking if we could also, with the approval, to ensure that the charges are delineated. However, that's not reflected on the minutes. So this is in response to the issue of the oncology is already being paid from other sources, like the insurance. So whatever the Cancer Trust Fund is going to pay, that actually be delineated in any of the invoices, only okay. Services that weren't covered by other sources.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Under BI, under new business.
Okay, thank you, Yvette. So we'll make sure that Remelin makes those corrections to the minutes and then have her send out the revised minutes, upload that and send it out to the members.
Thank you.
So can we go ahead and approve the March 25th pending revisions? We have a motion. Okay. Yes.
I move.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Second,
Yvette. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to report from the chair. So my report is first financial as of March 31st. Total cash in the account is we have $2,765,856.26. However, out of that, most of it is already allocated towards the awards, the projects. That's $2,479,099.25. So we now have unallocated and available is $286,757. So this financial report hasn't been uploaded yet to the UOG website, but it should be coming up soon. And just for those, I know Dr. Awadi, since you're a newer member, we're required by law to have our financial reports posted on the UOG website. So you can look at all the reports for several years. So that's what's available. The other thing that's happening is we did receive a FOIA request from the office of Senator Joe Sinaugstine on April 15th. They were requesting information about GMH's requests for Guam Cancer Trust Fund monies, including minutes, application documents, and all correspondence relative to the application. And so thank you to Mr. Camacho, who worked very hard in compiling all of that information. And that response was sent to Mr. Misnan at Senator Sinaugstine's office on April 21st. Oops. And so one of the things that I wanted to just finish up here with my report is just a reminder of our roles as Guam Cancer Trust Fund Council members, because it seems like there's a confusion about what we are able to do legally. And so I was reminded by my boss and that we need to do this. So I'm just gonna kind of read through this just so it's on the record that we went through this. Just to remember that UOG is responsible for administering the Guam Cancer Trust Fund, and UOG is the only entity that is authorized to allocate Guam Cancer Trust Fund funds. And UOG can only allocate the funds to nonprofit and charitable organizations that provide cancer screening, treatment support services, cancer education and outreach. And this is according to Section 5A in our current original rules and regs that are still in place because we have not gotten the revised rules and regs approved yet by the legislature. Another point is that the council is not authorized to allocate funds, and its role is to evaluate applications from nonprofit and charitable organizations, determine their eligibility for the funds, rank them, and make recommendation to UOG, the president, as to whether to approve an application and what amounts of funding an applicant should have, should receive. It is then the UOG president to consider the recommendations of the council and make the final determination of which applications to approve. And so, you know, we just need to keep that in mind that we are a recommending body and that ultimately it's the UOG president, President Christ, who makes that final approval. So any questions from the council members or anything not clear?
No, that's all perfectly clear. I think what happened is somebody got very, very passionate and let passion overrule purpose and reason. And I mean, if we look at how this council has worked for the year 6 months, I think I've been on it, we've been consistent in that area there. So I think the reiteration was timely. And I'm glad to see that that part has been reinforced. We are an advisory body. We are not the funding body. There's a huge difference.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody else want to make a comment real quick or question before we move on? Okay, thank you. So now we'll have the report from our program manager, Remlin Yamanaka.
Hi, everybody. Well, I just want to say that the meeting minutes and audio recordings have been uploaded to our website, and there are some that I'm still working on because I guess of the internet, some of the audio recording has been cut off. So I'm trying my very best to put everything on our website. So just give it a few more days, but if you want to see them, they're already, most of them are on our website. And for item B, our remaining balance for the following contracts as of yesterday. So we have American Cancer Society, they have a balance of $63,186. So basically they're done with submitting their contracts because their contract ended in January January 2021. And then Azuda Foundation, as you know, they had a no cost extension that was approved. So right now they've spent $216,134.82. So they're doing pretty well. And now their balance is up to 455, but Mr. Espadon said he has more invoices that he needs to submit. And then for Edward M. Calvo, as of right now, their balance is $200,156. And I still have a few more invoices that I need to close out for FY 2020. And then for Guam Cancer Care for Direct Services, they have been submitting invoices and their contract ends in May of this year. So they're doing pretty good. They've been sending big invoices. So right now I'm in the verge of compiling it and looking over it so that I can process payments for them. So the balance will go down. And then for Guam Cancer Care for Education and Outreach, since we're still in the pandemic, they haven't been going out or, you know, doing any trainings or education outreach for their program. So that's about it for the FY 2020 contracts. And then for Catholic Social Services, I am still processing FY 2019 invoices because they were approved a no-cost extension up to, I believe, March of 2021. And yes, that's about it. And then the Zuda, Edward, and Calvo, FY 2020, I explained that already. So that's about it for my report. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Remelin. Okay, I had a comment, but I can't remember what it is. Anyways, okay, old business. We'll move on to old business. So I just wanted to bring up the topic of the GMH application for FY 2021 funding. So, you know, this has been kind of a controversial situation over the past couple of weeks. There's been a lot of questions and kind of back and forth emails. We did approve their application for $126,500 for medications, local oncologist contract, and patient family care, cancer care prevention training and education programs. But unfortunately, when some of the questions that were posed by Kathy that went to legal counsel that I forwarded, when our legal counsel, Anthony Camacho, read through it, he said, you know, basically GMHA is not eligible to receive the funding because they are not a charitable organization and they are a government entity. And so it violates the rules, our own rules. Let me look at my notes here. And so his recommendation is that even though we recommended funding them, that we're going to have to, GMH is defined as a government entity and therefore they are not eligible for funding. So we're going to have to unfortunately not award GMH the $126,000.
I have a question.
Sure.
I understand that the decision has been made, but my question on the charitable organization, is GMH not defined as a charitable organization as well?
That's correct. They are a nonprofit organization, but they are not a charitable. And go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah. So they don't have to be, okay, they have to be either a nonprofit, okay, or a charitable organization. Now, I know our regulations state that you can give it to a hospital, but the hospital would have to be either a nonprofit or a charitable organization, and that's as defined under the Guam Cancer Trust Fund rules, okay? So GMH, basically, if you look at the rules and the definitions of government entity, nonprofit, or charitable organization, GMH would not qualify as a nonprofit under our existing rules. GMH would not qualify as a charitable organization under our rules. GMH would qualify as a government entity under our rules. Hence, that's it. And just so you know, this isn't, you know, we're not singling out GMH, okay? Essentially, after the OPA issued a, you know, the negative audit findings on the Guam Cancer Trust Fund's activity, I believe it was last year or maybe late the year before, we have been trying to ensure that our operations strictly comply with the laws and the rules governing the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. So that's it. Thank you.
Aren't there segments of GMH, though, that are charitable?
Well, the let me just state here so that there'd be greater understanding and not a lot of confusion. So under our rules, okay, in particular Section 2, a charitable organization means a nonprofit entity on Guam organized for charitable purposes, such as for religious, charitable, scientific, testing for public safety, literary or educational purposes, and is eligible or holds tax-exempt status under Guam or federal law. That's the definition under our rules of a charitable organization. In terms of a nonprofit organization, it means any number of persons, please note how that starts, okay, associated together on Guam for any lawful purpose other than pecuniary profit, and no part of the income of which is distributed to its members, directors, or officers. It may be incorporated under Guam law or may be eligible for or hold tax-exempt status under Guam or federal law. And excluded from this definition are labor unions and cooperative associations. So under either of those definitions, if you look at the Enabling Act for Guam Memorial Hospital, which states that it is essentially a public corporation. There's a third definition in Section 2 of our rules, governmental entity. It means any Guam or local government body or agency, any entity publicly funded, appointed or otherwise organized by federal, Guam, or local government for governmental purposes. So GMH, of all those three definitions, fits the definition of a governmental entity under our rules and not a nonprofit or charitable organization. And also be advised that the law, and we're talking about the statute that was cited earlier here, states that the Guam Cancer Trust Fund funding can only go to nonprofit or charitable organizations. Okay, so that's kind of the hurdle, if you will, that was could not be overcome by GMH's application. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. And I know you have to leave pretty soon to go to the Board of Regents meeting, correct?
Yeah, that is. I could take a couple of minutes if there are any more questions or concerns.
Okay. So anything else anybody want to ask Anthony before he has to leave?
I'd just like to ask, so with the conclusion of your opinion and Dr. Kreis's email response that he was going to follow your lead and not sign the contract, what are the next steps? Are we going to, will the university send a letter soon so that they'd be notified?
Yes, I could do that. Okay.
And it's just because it's been a couple of weeks already, and I think out of fairness, we need to let them know where they stand.
Okay, so we can send that letter. And then further, the other thing you could do, just so you know, all right, there's a work around this, and that is if, let's say I was a nonprofit or charitable organization as defined under the rules. Let's say that I was already providing some kind of medical services. So let's say I hired an oncologist and I had an MOA with GMH to use that oncologist. Believe it or not, I'd probably qualify for GCTF funding. Okay. under that, if I had applied for it. And so there are ways to achieve the intent within our rules. That's just one example of how that could be done. Okay, but you would need.
Their Guam Memorial Hospital Volunteers Association, the quote unquote pink ladies, is also a nonprofit, correct?
Well, yes. Before we assume, we'd have to, you know, that's part of the application process is when we vet these applications, we definitely have to make sure that they are entities that we are allowed to give awards to. Okay, so that's part of the
My question is, if by chance they are a nonprofit and they submit a grant application and it's funneled through them to provide direct services of some sort, then that's another opportunity, correct?
That would be an opportunity, but once again, please read the rules very carefully. So it's not just any nonprofit.
Correct.
You know, it's the ones that are actually providing, you know, cancer care, treatment, screening, so on and so forth. So,
and it would have to be stated in their mission what their mission is as a nonprofit, correct?
Well, yes, and they could also state these things in their application. Okay.
Thank you.
So thank you, Kathy. So, Anthony, could we, since we haven't submitted the revised rules and regs, could we make the revisions in our revised before we send it in so that we could allow government entities like GMH?
Yes, yeah, that I was going to state that was the other option, you know, so within our existing rules, there's a workaround I just discussed, but the second option would be if you wanted to do that, you could revise the rules, okay, so that GMHA would fall into that definition. But here's the catch, okay, so if you look at the statute that creates the Guam Cancer Trust Fund, okay, the very first entity, so it comes from, so there are all these tobacco taxes, and all the tobacco tax revenue goes into the Healthy Futures Fund, okay? And then the legislature had delineated who gets those funds. Number one on the list is guess who?
GMH.
Okay? They get $1 million a year off the top. That's what it says, okay? Matter of fact, they're supposed to get a monthly payment of 1/12 or something of that $1 million monthly. That's what it says. Now, I don't know if they're getting that. But they're already a beneficiary of the Healthy Futures Fund. There was a lot of discussion in emails about legislative intent. Well, it was very clear that GMH was supposed to get that portion of the funds, and the Guam Cancer Trust Fund was supposed to then, we're supposed to get about 15% of it, or as appropriated by the legislature, you know, every fiscal year. We're supposed to screen applications by nonprofits or charitable organizations, okay, who are providing cancer care. And there are many of them on island. We're familiar with them all. If you're looking at the legislative intent, so you have, you know, $1 million of the fund, Healthy Futures Fund, going to GMH already, 15% is supposed to go to these nonprofit and charitable organizations. So I believe that we should fulfill the intent of that law, okay, by looking at qualified nonprofits and charitable organizations and not simply giving it to GMH. Although what is undeniable very clearly is the current dire straits, financial straits that GMH happens to be in. So I know that it's a sensitive issue. It's a serious one. But also look at the statute, the way it's there. I mean, you could amend the law. You could amend our rules, so that is still a viable option number two to resolving this issue if the real intent is to try to get funding to GMH. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it. Okay. So we're still in old business.
I got to go. I'll see you.
Okay. Thanks, Anthony. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Okay, so we're still in old business. So we're not going to be giving funding to GMH, and we will send them a notification. Also, one of the things, you know, I did point out that we provided funding back in 2015 and 2016, but the response was that, you know, because of the recent audit, OPA audit, they really want to make sure strict compliance. Yes, Yvette.
Can I, just for clarification, my understanding is that we already voted on this and we sent our recommendations to the president, and it was the president's decision not to fund.
Correct.
So wouldn't that take us out of the equation? We're no longer the ones responsible for reporting that to GMH. Shouldn't that come from the president's office? So that
yes.
There's no confusion that it's not necessarily the council who voted against it, but it was ultimately the president's final yes. decision.
That's correct. Yes. So we will make sure, you know, we help him compose the letter, just to, and we'll make sure that it's noted that we did vote in favor of it, but it was the ultimate decision was the president. So, yeah. But I just wanted to report that is what happened, so that everybody's really clear on what went on. The other thing too that I wanted to let you know of is that, you know, there was the question of, well, what about UOG and the Global Learning and Engagement application? Because UOG is also a government entity. And so that award is going to be rescinded as well. We will be rescinding, and that has already happened, actually. They've already notified the GLE office, the Global Learning and Engagement office, and informed Carlos Titano that we will not be awarding them because, you know, if we're going to, we might have given it to them in the past, but we have to be fair across the board. So we will not be awarding to the UOG Global Learning and Engagement. So I just wanted, that's out of our hands, but I just wanted to let everybody know that that's
Rachel, what, wasn't that one of the reasons why we did not allow them to apply at one other time?
Yeah, last year we said, we asked them, you know, we're not really sure what's going on, so don't apply. You know, I talked to Carlos and he said, yeah, that's not a problem. So, okay. So thank you for bearing with me on all these interesting times, difficult. so on to anything else before of old business before we move on to the new business. Let me see. Okay, so for new business, I wanted to propose, I know that we voted that we would go ahead and send the rules and regs forward to the legislature, but I did not do it yet because I just felt like it was premature, and I'm glad that we did not, because I feel like we need to possibly add two provisions. And so I'm going to propose this. If you decide, no, you don't want to do that, that's fine. And but I'm just going to make a suggestion. And wait, I'm going to stop share with this. And I want to share something else really quickly, if I may. So I'm proposing, can you see that? The new business? Oh, you can? Okay, great. I'm proposing two new additions. One of them has to do with adding a code of conduct for council members. Even if it's only a short one or two sentences, and this is just a suggestion and we can hash out verbally what it will say, but something to the effect of Guam Cancer Trust Fund council members are expected to serve as role models, as models of public conduct through their personal demeanor, public respect for civilized dialogue, whether via verbal or written communication, strict avoidance of conflict of interest and commitment to Balcancer Trust Fund self-regulation and periodic self-assessment. And I actually took this almost word for word from the code of conduct that's in the Board of UOG Board of Regents document. And this is just an idea, and we don't have to have this exact language. And this is something that we can work through over the next week or so. But I just feel like with the recent events that have happened over the last 2 weeks, with some of the email exchanges that have gone between, especially from one member, that there's just, I know for myself personally, I felt, I kind of felt bullied and a little bit harassed by some of the demeanor of in emails. So I just feel like we should just all agree that we will treat, as council members, we will treat each other with respect, so that going forward, you know, it's an expectation that's written down. Any comment or suggestions?
No, I think it's an excellent idea for obvious reasons. Number one, as you know, I express concern about the legal liability that we carry as board, as council members. And when we have people going rogue, they endanger the rest of the council members. And if we looked at what happened at Guam Housing and Urban Renewal, you know, those people got hit with legal bills in excess of $30,000. And so by having this standard of acceptable behavior, or our code of ethics, our code of conduct, I think will go a long way towards keeping that out of our meetings. Because what it did is created a toxic relationship. It created a toxic environment. And when you look at the fact that accusations were being flung around that were not researched, not true, I mean, but being flung around in behalf, being by a board member, it created a liability for the council if this had gone any further. But, you know, the way you've written this out, which is an excellent start, and we just need to add one more thing here. As council members, we serve at the people of Guam. We are not lawyers. We are not actuaries. We are not financial managers. We're ordinary people who have stepped forward to assist the university by taking some of the grunt work on us and helping clarify the end result. Towards that end, we should be able to request an opinion of legal counsel, because it is the legal counsel's opinions that protect us as council members. Because, and we'll go back to this current situation right here. You know, a big stink was made about this whole legal question and everything like that. It shouldn't have gone there. It shouldn't have been that way. As council members, we should have the ability to request clarification or guidance in matters outside of our area of expertise. I think we need to make sure that that is part of the code of conduct, so that we don't get into another situation here where blazing personalities will overcome due diligence, which is was my concern, because I have been on boards, and through my work as Guam citizens, I have seen what happens when boards and councils get sidetracked into breaking the laws or skirting the laws, and the long range impact of that. It can be devastating to an organization. So I think we weathered this. I just hope we don't have to go through this again. And I think enacting the code of conduct, but, you know, including somewhere in here that, and the duties of board members, being able to access resources of the university to make informed decisions needs to be part of it, so that we don't get into this pissing contest, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, and just to follow up, Ken, with what you said, I was sent an email earlier today, and all the council members were included. And I did express that any member of the council, if you have questions, anybody, if you have questions, legal or, you know, cancer related, sorry, Guam Cancer Trust Fund related questions that you want to ask the legal counsel, you have every right to ask. And I will always forward those questions. And I, you know, I may not agree with asking, but I'm not going to stop that. And I will forward it, because, you know, you're serving on the council. If you have questions that you want to ask the legal counsel that you're not sure about, then by all means, you have the right to ask. And I'm not going to stop that. So I just want to make that clear. Go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to say that Ken made a statement that, you know, we are not attorneys. We're not financial managers. I'm an ordinary person with a high school diploma. I don't have the legal expertise. And so I sought the legal expertise because I wanted guidance. I wanted to make sure I was able to make an informed decision, but more importantly, to stay within the boundaries of the law. That was very critical to me, because the University of Guam and the Guam Cancer Trust Fund and we as council members have been entrusted with people's money to help people that are sick. And there is a law that protects that funding source, protects this council. And I wanted to just ensure that we stayed within that law, you know, and we don't cross it, because as council members, we are liable, but we are also personally liable. And that was my biggest concern. Secondly, I wanted to ask, I appreciate you putting this into the rules and regulations, but I just wanted to take it one step further. And are we gonna put some sort of penalty if it's violated? I mean, what happens if it's violated? Where do we go from there? How do we address it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Talk about.
I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. You know, I think another thing we can do is when we do the letters saying congratulations, you know, you're a new council member, we can put these code of conduct, just remember that as a member, you know, these things in there to remind people from the very beginning. But as far as consequences, I haven't thought that far ahead. I don't know. I don't know if we do want to put something in there. I mean, or trust that we just will have a good experience. I don't know. I'm open to suggestions.
Well, we're going to get into the weeds on this in our next meeting, if I'm correct. I will let you know that many corporate and non-corporate boards and commissions, they have a clause in their bylaws that allows a member to be removed for cause, and they're very specific causes. We could say, we could put something in here that says to the effect that violating the GCTF code of ethics could be cause for removal from the council. And that goes back to the president.
Actually, Ken, there is in our revised rules and regs, there is a statement that says council members can be removed for cause. I just have to find it, We never said what the cause was. So maybe that's something that we can add in there.
You don't want to make it too specific.
Yeah.
Or cause. That is all you need to have in there. Then the cause can be interpreted to fit the situation. Let's say, for example, I just won the lottery And I went out and tied one on. And then I drove my car right through Chief Kapua's statue. That has nothing to do with the Cancer Trust Fund or anything. But my poor judgment could reflect badly on the trust, and that could be a reason.
Yeah.
And many boards and commissions, things like that have been used as a reason to remove somebody from a board or commission because their actions in public reflect back onto the organization. And it stops us from trying to guess everything that could go wrong.
May I suggest just simplifying it and saying at the discretion of the president, since really he's the only one who can remove any of us because he put us here.
You know, actually in the rules and regs, says remove full for cause, the Guam Cancer Trust Fund Council may remove any of its members for cause.
There we go.
But it's the president that appoints us. So how can we remove someone we didn't appoint?
Yeah, we should probably change that to president.
You know, okay. We didn't appoint one another and we didn't vote for each other. It was the president. So it should be his prerogative.
Okay. So we'll change that to president. So we need a motion to add language and then add language. So got a motion from Ken.
I move that we add language to the new rules and regulations that introduces and codifies a code of conduct for council members. And secondly, corrects the error on who may remove a council member.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Wadi. Any more discussion on this before we vote? Okay, all in favor? Say aye.
Yep.
Okay. Great, thank you. Any opposed? Okay, so can we, we'll work on this over the next, maybe over the next couple of weeks before our next meeting, and then we'll have something finalized and then we could present, you know, officially before the council and vote on it to approve it. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So then the second thing that I was going to propose, and you know, don't have to do this, but we can change the award eligibility so that we can change it from the nonprofit and charitable organizations, that language, to nonprofits and or charitable organizations, including government entities. Entities, yeah. And so then we would actually add examples for hospitals like GMH and educational institutions because we're not eligible. UOG and GMH is not eligible. GCC wouldn't be eligible either.
So can I ask a question? If we add government entities, does that allow public health? Or only the clinics, the FQHC clinics? Dr. Red, you know?
Oh yeah, that's right. So
I'm a little bit hesitant of making a hasty decision here because this particular part of the rules and regs has been a problem since day one. I don't think it's something we're gonna figure out now, but we really have to think about how to write it in there, not just to support certain institutions, but to really be fair about it. So
we brought this up over every year when we have grant applications for as long as I've been on this council. And when we generalize government entities, now I'm asking about public health.
Yeah.
And they're not a charitable or nonprofit, but they're a government entity, but they're not cancer direct, but they do direct services, but then they do have a clinic, which is the FQHCs, the Northern and Southern Clinic. So with that qualifier. We have to be really careful in how we include government entities.
I'm almost inclined to just leave it because and not just leave it as it is. And that would mean that GMH and UOG would not be able to get funding anymore. But you know, GMH does get Healthy Futures Fund funding. UOG, it's usually only the Global Learning and Engagement Office that applies for it. So they'll have to just try to get funding somewhere else and just to keep it clean and make sure that the other, I mean, there's so many nonprofits and charitable organizations that apply and there's so little funding.
I would agree with you on that because part of what we've been trying to do is to build resources locally. And the easier way to build cancer support resources will be through nonprofits and charitable organizations. That's just my feeling on it because I know an organization that is starting up. They're going after cancer and end-stage renal support.
I kind of mixed on this just because I feel like if we don't expand the definition, we're really limiting the amount of organizations that can apply for direct services. Most of the organizations that are applying, probably one is for direct service, one or two, and majority are applying for the education and outreach. So that's kind of where I mix is if we don't expand that, then we're really limiting the organizations that qualify for the direct services component of the funding.
Well, we have Guam Cancer Care, AZUDA, EM Calvo, American Cancer Society, Catholic Social Services.
But how many of those, aside from Guam Cancer Care, is actually providing the medical services?
Catholic Social Services, they're doing hospice.
That's respite care.
Yeah, respite care.
So we really only have one at the moment, and it's been the only one, and that's why it's the one that's all received the majority of the funding.
Well, I think the problem is we haven't, as a fund, been doing a very good job promoting it and promoting the opportunities. I got into this conversation through diabetes, oddly enough, because there's people I know, they want to, based on experiences, they want to start a nonprofit to do custom meal plans tailored to people going through chemotherapy or going through dialysis. And they want to know what I thought of it because of how public I've been about diabetes lately. And so we're starting to see more people looking to fill badly needed direct services. And that would be considered a direct services, meals custom to the needs of people going through chemotherapy or end-stage renal dialysis.
Remelin and I also met with the Payless Foundation, and they are interested in submitting a grant next year, providing assistance for purchase of medications, cancer-related medications to qualified individuals. And I don't know how they're going to work that. I told them that's beyond my scope. And if you can figure out how you're going to distribute that. And but they are interested. So that would be something to help with medication costs.
Are they a nonprofit organization or a charitable organization?
Yes, Payless Foundation.
It's like the Edward Calvo Foundation. It's a nonprofit organized. Yeah. They're 501(c), I believe.
Yes, they are.
So I think that, you know, something, you know, food for thought. We as council members can help spread the word through our abilities and contacts and stuff, because I was not really aware of this fund until Kathy started sharing with me about what this fund is and what it does. You know, I've only lived here, I've only been back on island 12 years.
Yeah. So our options are, I agree that because of the language, that if we are going to change the wording to allow GMH and UOG, it's not something we can do quickly. We would need Hadquan Anthony Camacho to look it over and make sure we have the wording correctly. So that would take some time. So there's that option, or there's the option of we just leave it alone, not include it, and maybe consider it in the future after the legislature has approved it. And we kind of take a pulse next year and see if there really is, you know, if there's a lot of funding available that we can include GMH. I don't know. I leave it up to the council. I need a motion. There hasn't been any motion about this, so.
I move we leave it as is, subject to getting our rules approved and then working on them after we work with the legislature to make any changes needed to the funding legislation. Because we're going to run into that trap again if we try to lead the law. Let's get our rules approved so we can start acting under our new guidance.
Okay.
And then, I mean, like, this is a project that's never going to end. So our next year goal should be to make changes at the legislation level to strengthen the fund.
Yeah. Okay. That's a motion. Do I have a second? To leave it as is and not include this?
A second.
Okay. Second by Kathy. So any more discussion before we vote on this motion? Okay, all in favor of basically deleting it? Yes, all in favor? Okay, all opposed? Okay, all right, so motion is carried. All right, thank you very much. We're finished with old business. So we can move to open discussion, and I invite our visiting guests, if they have any questions or comments, they can also, this is your chance to make comments or questions.
May I, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Joe Metzen with Senator St. Augustine's office. We just wanted to share that our inquiry with regard to GMHA's application was first on the basis of understanding that there was an approval when I attended the last meeting, I believe it was. And we did have some concerns because of the status that of which they were approved being considered a nonprofit. And I know the law may be unclear to a lot of people, but I was very glad to hear that the attorney and President Christ and attorney Camacho for responding very expeditiously, actually, to our request. And Dr. LG for setting that in as soon as it was received. We appreciate that. And now knowing that, unfortunately, GMH will not, you know, be able to avail of some of the funding that it could potentially receive should the rules change. I think it's something that that you guys have a job ahead of you to take care of. But we wanted to make sure that the approval at that last meeting was not done, to make sure it was on the up and up, to make sure it was done appropriately. Because as Attorney Camacho mentioned earlier, you know, government finances are, it's really thinning out with the pandemic. So we just wanted to say thank you for responding There were some things that I received that really raised red flags for us. I'm glad to see that in the new business, you guys are going to create a
code of conduct.
Code of conduct. Thank you, Mr. Ken, because that's very important for any organization to be able to work together. And even if we have differences, still be able to recognize that there's a mission. And so thank you for that. We're very happy to see that. So I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who is on the council. Continue the great work, because there are people out there who we know need the help that you guys are providing for our community through the nonprofits. So thank you very much. And thank you for the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and joining us. We appreciate it. Anybody else? Would anybody else like to make any comments or questions? Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And looks like we need to get a contact Mr. Scro and get a formal letter of resignation. And then we'll have to find another member. But anyway, thank you so much. Everybody have a great week and take care, stay safe.
I'd like to make a motion for adjournment.
Motion for adjournment. So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I'm going to stop recording now.
Bye. Have a good night.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.